He is visiting the U of I campus. In fact, will give a talk at noontime today, to which anyone who is interested is invited. He'll be speaking on a wide range of social and legal issues facing the Native American community at large, and that will be at noon today in Illini Room C of the South Lounge of the Illini Union. That's from noon to 1:30, and again, anybody who is interested in coming to hear him and to exchange ideas is welcome to do that. For many years, our guest has been a political activist addressing human rights issues in the U.S. and abroad. He has actively worked on such critical issues plaguing Native Americans as violation of land and treaty rights, exploitation of Indian culture, sacred songs, dances, and ceremonies, and the retention of parental control over the education of Indian children. Frequently, he's been an outspoken critic of the U.S. government policies concerning Indian nations in the U.S., in Central and South America, as well as a staunch opponent of U.S. complicity in the apartheid system of South Africa and U.S.-backed wars in Angola, Mozambique, and Palestine. As we talk with Mr. Bellecourt, you are welcome to be a part of our conversation. All you need to do that is pick up your telephone and dial the number. It's 333-9455. That's our local number. We also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much for coming and spending some time with us.
Yeah, Anishinaabeji, Wabananini, Gawababi, Kanikog, Anishinaabe, and Dana Kiwad. What I did, David, is I greeted you and your listeners in the language of the Anishinaabe, which is a word in our language that describes us as the people. We are better known, of course, in the United States as the Chippewa, and, of course, in Canada, we're called the Ojibwa, or the Soto. And of course, as I said, in our language, we've always described ourselves as the people. And I sent a greeting and said that my real name is Wabananini, and I come from the White Earth Anishinaabe Nation, where the Anishinaabe reside. I'm better known, as I said, as my missionary, by my missionary colonial name as Vernon Bellecourt, which came by way of the Jesuit missionaries and merchants, who came over to the so-called New World to exploit not only our souls, our spirit, our spiritualism, but certainly to exploit our lands and resources as well. And we've characterized this, in fact, as America's longest war, which still continues today against the little that remains of our lands, our natural resources, and in fact our ancient liberties and our culture and our spiritual way of life is still under attack on many fronts. Mm-hmm. And I think, frankly, that it's what's brought me here to the campus of the University of Illinois to support the Indian students here and others who have seen through the whole ridiculous nature of the mascot here at the University of Illinois, and to give support to them and to try to lend my voice and my concern to this continued perpetuation of the stereotype about our Indian people.
Hmm. Well, I hope that we'll get a chance to talk about a number of things, but why don't we start there with that? Because it has been a controversy here on this campus. A number of people have raised the issue of whether or not it's appropriate for the chief to continue as the mascot of the team doing the performance at the athletic events and so forth. And I think that perhaps people here are having a difficult time understanding why this is so important to Native American people. That is, why it is such a sensitive issue. Perhaps you can talk about that.
Well, first of all, I come from the Chippewa Nation in Minnesota, and this issue has been brought up also by concerned parents of Indian students in the various school districts in the state of Minnesota. And we found, as is the case across this country, there are probably thousands of high schools and universities and private colleges who still use the racist caricature of Indian people in their mascots. In Minnesota, the Indian parents took on this issue several years ago, and in fact, as the State Board of Education, by majority vote, had ordered all the high schools to eliminate the mascots, and also to eliminate the use of Indian names that perpetuate the myth that we were nothing more than violent savages who went around, one, committing suicide by marauding one another, and number two, that all we did was burn out the settlers. when in reality it was America's longest war that continues against the Indian people. But in projecting the character of the mascot is one issue. The other issue is, of course, in calling themselves the warriors, mottos in the school, scalp the Indians, and all this stuff. You know, we didn't start scalping. That was started by the Dutch settlers who introduced that to prove to the that they were the bounties. They had the bounty, and they would be able to collect money for each scalp that they've taken. So that was nothing that we had had originated nor done. But anyhow, the high schools have been all ordered to change their mascot, to get rid of the mascot. So that issue is gone. The mascots are all gone. But now the issue is whether they're going to be allowed to continue calling themselves the Indians or the Braves or the Warriors. And so that issue may well have to go to court if the school boards, I should say the faculties on various schools, oftentimes manipulating the emotions of the students, want to continue calling themselves Indian names. But let's get right here to Illinois. And some of the arguments that I've heard proposed here or offered here is that, well, this is a reflection of our pride for the Indian people, or this is part of our proud heritage, or this is part of our values. And of course, we heard Ronald Reagan more than anyone, and now we hear George Bush talking about America's values. Well, we ought to understand what America's values are based on, and maybe then people will begin to understand why we want to end this characterization of our people through these mascots. Black Hawk was a great leader here in what is called the state of Illinois, and most people only know Black Hawk as the hockey team. But Black Hawk, when his people were being hunted down in the forest of Illinois, were being murdered by the U.S. death squads and the military, victims of U.S. State-sponsored terrorism, I guess I could say. He was asked a question by the generals, Black Hawk, why do you insist on making war? Black Hawk, of course, thought it was rather a stupid question, and he might have even chuckled before he responded in this fashion. He said, you know our cause for making war. It is known to all white men, and they ought to be ashamed of it. Now, I used the term white man because it was within their words, and at that time our oppressor was white. Obviously today we realize it's not a racial issue, but we do realize also that particularly among white America, who had denied themselves their own culture, their own identity, their own language, music, and art, and opting to become a part of the American melting pot, that they don't know anything about themselves. And not knowing anything about themselves, there's a lack of self-respect, and that is then conveyed to other people of culture who have their identity, who have their music, who have their traditions. And I think this is one of the basic problems why a lot of the young people on this campus have become very mean-spirited over this issue, which is being perpetrated by their parents, first of all, and the alumni. And through the peer pressure in the community, there's been tremendous abuse of the few Indian students who are still left on this campus, and that's unacceptable. Black Hawk also said, we can never understand why it is that you Americans always take with a gun what you could have through love. And if you look and examine America's foreign policy today, in that we perpetuate wars against people in 16 different parts of the world, on Central America, and Southern Angola, Mozambique, we can see that that military macho mentality still prevails among the political leaders today, that they continue to insist on taking through violence what they could have through love. Tecumseh was a man of peace of the Shawnee Nation who also inhabited these lands. He was eventually, as many of our people have been manipulated in all Americans' war, during the so-called American Revolution, the French were manipulating us, the English were manipulating us, and the colonies. So many times we found our people fighting on different sides of the issue. Tecumseh was eventually assassinated, I think, in about 1777, I believe, up in St. Lawrence Seaway across from Detroit, Michigan, on St. Anne's Island, being manipulated by the revolutionary forces on all three sides of the fight. Tecumseh, after looking at the expansion of the 13 colonies from the eastern seaboard, tried to build an alliance of all the Indian nations up and down from Illinois through the Ohio Valley down into the what's now called Georgia and Florida. And everywhere he went, he tried to unify the Indian nations to put up a united front. And this was the message that he always had. And again, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings by using the word white man, but I'm only sharing with you what Tecumseh and his observations. And here is what he said some 6 or 7 years before he was finally assassinated. He said, each year these white intruders become more greedy, exacting, demanding, and overbearing. Wants and oppressions are our lot. Are we not being stripped day by day of the little that remains of our ancient liberties? Unless each tribe unanimously combines to give a check to the avarice and the ambitions of the whites, they will conquer us. Apart and disunited, we will be driven from our native lands and scattered like autumn leaves before the wind. End quote. About 2 years ago, I was listening to one of the major networks, and I heard Peter Jennings, the anchor man for one of the major news networks, and he was talking about the primaries in Peoria, Illinois. And in accounting the history of this particular area, he said this land was one time inhabited by the Peoria Indians. And then he went on to say, I guess they just left. I mean, that's all he could say. Well, how did they leave? They left by going back into the bosom of Mother Earth. And they were wiped out in this area by the settlers who came here, who probably the descendants today are so vehement and mean-spirited in attacks on the Indian students and the other students here who are trying to be reasonable with them and to make them understand why, on one hand, when these descendants of these settlers who totally committed a genocide, ethnocide, a holocaust against our Indian people, would now put up the argument that we are, this is a reflection of our values. This is a reflection of our pride about Indian people. Well, I suppose if we were to allow the apartheid system to survive in South Africa and the blacks allowed themselves to be forced onto the so-called Bantustans, which are internment camps and similar to our reservations at one time were concentration camps where we were pushed onto the worst land, and there imposed economic and social conditions and inadequate health conditions to bring about the long death of the blacks of South Africa as happened to us. And then after the blacks had been totally wiped out, they tried to use the white racist regime of South Africa, which tried to use a caricature of Nelson Mandela as their mascot. You could see that the few remaining blacks of the apartheid regime would certainly be outraged about it. The case is no different here. And fact is, without being facetious or mean-spirited, we would like to suggest that these young students here and the faculty and the alumni who support this mascot as vehemently as they do, they might want to really look at what their values and what their heritage is. And I think they would then be ashamed of themselves. For instance, this is called the Land of Lincoln. The day that Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, allegedly to free the slaves, I'm associated with people like Kwame Ture and black leaders across this country have been for years, and many of them proposed the argument that slavery really has not ended. We're just getting paid a little bit for our work. But nonetheless, when you look at the situation that has faced blacks in this country as well, that together we continue to remain the victims of America's racist policies and racist past. And so Abraham Lincoln, the day he signed the Emancipation Proclamation, also signed an order to hang 38 Dakota or Sioux people in a place called Mankato, Minnesota, a mass lynching, literally. When the people were starved into submission, when they finally demanded food, the United States again used this as an excuse to make war on the Indian people in the southwestern United States. So if America wants to have a mascot, or particularly in this case, if the University of Illinois wants to have a mascot that reflects their heritage and their values, they may well want to choose General George Armstrong Custer or Abraham Lincoln and go out on the floor during halftime and dance around like a fool. I know for sure that if they tried to do that by using, say, a caricature of Bill Bojangles Robinson or George Washington Carver or, for that matter, Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, they wouldn't get away with it. And so we, in a sense, are really urging the athletic program, particularly the black brothers on the basketball team and the football team, to speak out against the further use of the Chief Alenowick mascot. It's an insult to our people. It's an insult to our history. And I would just hope that the good people in this area would prevail over those bigots that want to continue perpetuating this this caricature. Mm.
Well, to reintroduce, if you just have tuned in, our guest this morning in this first part of Focus is Vernon Belcourt. He is an American Indian activist. He's one of the founders of the American Indian Movement. He has been involved in politics for many years, and will be giving a talk, in fact, this noon on the U of I campus at the Illini Union on some of these issues. And here we're, of course, open to your questions and your comments. You want to pick up the telephone and call. You can talk with him, share your thoughts with us. The local number here is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, which is good anywhere you can hear us. So if you're listening around Illinois, over in Indiana, you can use that line and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Here's our first caller. We'll go to the toll-free line. Hello.
Hey.
Yes.
I agree with most of the Indian-type movement things as far as, like, I think gravediggers should be shot and all that kind of stuff. But I think this is kind of carrying it a little bit too far, because most of the time when a team is named after somebody, that's an honor. In other words, you know, the Packers, because they like the Packers in Green Bay. And, you know, to me, this is carrying it too far. I mean, would they rather the mascot be George Armstrong Custer or somebody like that? You know what I'm saying?
Who really? I think that's an excellent idea.
Okay, but see, Custer was not very nice to the Indians. You know, I would consider it more of an honor to have a team named after an Indian. I mean, I don't think they're doing it derogatorily, and I think they have named teams or had mascots that were black people. George Washington Carver would be a good mascot, I'm sure, for somebody like Grambling or somebody like that. I don't know who their mascots are, but you know what I'm saying? In other words, I mean, if it really bothers the Indians, you know, I'd change the name. But to me, I mean, this has carried it just a little bit too far. Thank you.
Okay. Well, well, I appreciate the comment.
You know, the point that you well make is that this is bothering the Indians. And I have a packet of press clippings and letters to the University of Illinois from some of the most prominent Indian leaders, both women and men, across the United States. And this is not just a local issue for the University of Illinois. It's a national issue. It goes to the whole disrespect for our sacred shrines, our burial site. It goes for the disrespect of our history, which has not been a good history in the sense of the American immigrant society and their treatment of Indian people. And so the thing is, I guess, what I mentioned at a forum I had here last night, in view of the fact that Indian people are hurt by this and it is causing them some sadness, and fact is that many, many letters have come in, as I said, to the University of Illinois urging them to change the mascot, to eliminate the mascot. If the situation were reversed and we found that we, out of ignorance or stupidity or whatever, were doing something, carrying on some type of action that was hurting the feelings of non-Indian people, in this case particularly white people in this country, you would only have to ask us once. There's been pleas by the students on this campus, not only the Indian students but their supporters, and it seems to fall on deaf ears. It seems as if people have made up their mind that they intend to keep this mascot and they're going to do it regardless of what happens. But let me suggest to you that, as is the case in Minnesota where a lawsuit may have to be filed, I would think that the same would happen here if they refuse to change the mascot or abandon the mascot. I would think that particularly within the Big Ten, you're going to see more and more larger demonstrations at all the different university campuses where we're going to urge the support of the athletes on the different teams to join with us in eliminating this mascot. So why go through all that problem? Why don't we just sit down and decide that we're going to eliminate the mascot? And then we will get on to the issue of whether or not the Indian people even want you to continue using the word Illini. When you look at the history of how the Indian people were massacred in this area, how can you now say you're honoring the Indian people by offering this mascot? I was at the tryouts last night. Anything that is being taught there has absolutely no relationship to the authentic Indian dance in this country. It was a combination of what they envisioned to be authentic Indian dance and some sort of modernistic choreography. It's an embarrassment to us to even have to stand there and watch it, but we were trying to be reasonable.
Isn't it also the case that you talked about the fact that in Minnesota, schools have reconsidered their use of images of Native Americans as mascots? There have also been some other universities that have in the past used them, and I think somehow Dartmouth is one. There may be some others that have also decided that they're not going to do that anymore.
More than 15 or 18 years ago, you're right, they had two cases that are stand out is the Dartmouth issue, and of course the whole issue of Little Red or whatever they call them in Oklahoma. So here in Oklahoma State, which is large Indian populations, and in California, they have dealt with this. So it's, you know, it shouldn't be something that's totally impossible for the people here on this campus to deal with.
You think if there were more Native Americans living in Illinois, or perhaps they were more organized and more vocal, that we wouldn't be talking about this now? It would have been settled.
It would have been settled a long time ago, and it was only through the intervention of a young man who's no longer on this campus because of the peer pressure and the insults and the attacks on his character that he has left. He's dropped out. I think there are three Indian students on this campus, and I think that's an indictment of this campus and its recruiting policies. I understand that altogether there are probably no more than 1,000 what would be considered minority students or people of color on this campus.
We have several callers. In fact, our lines are full. We'll go back to the line starting with number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Listen, I would like to applaud your guest and thank you for having this subject being brought out. I am a Black American student, and I found great offense with the person who called before, who obviously was white. See, your guest has brought a very legitimate fact to light, in that if it had been a Black American or a Mexican American, or for that matter even an Italian American who was being used in such a manner, although I'm sure their intentions are not negative, but they have not done the history, they have not done the research, and so therefore they don't know when they are slandering or forming offense with people. And it's ridiculous to be debating this issue because, again, if it had been a Black American, you would have already seen the students here, both Black and probably many white students too, making great protests. So I do hope that the school will find some type of means of handling this situation without having to go to litigation, which would be costly and really kind of absurd on our part, because it would bring us into the national light, and everybody would say, oh well, we don't want Indians here, and we don't respect them. And it's ridiculous. They don't even make up, as the guest said, they aren't even more than three or four of them here, and it really is an insult on the campus. Their recruitment policies just obviously just aren't great enough. But thank you.
Okay, I appreciate your comments.
Sure.
You want to follow up on anything the caller said?
Well, I don't really have to. Mm-hmm. I think the young man explained it pretty well.
We are about midway through here. I just want to take a moment to tell you about the programs that are scheduled for the rest of the week, and then we will continue taking calls. This morning, our guest is Vernon Belcourt. He is an American Indian activist. We're talking about Native American rights. Our telephone number here, 333-WILL. We do have one local line open. We're speaking with Native American activist Vernon Belcourt. You have questions for us, you can call. Next caller up is on our toll-free line. Good morning.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I just have two comments, or I guess questions.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, is it Mr. Delacour?
Mr. Belcourt. My real name is Wabunanini.
Mr. Wabunanini?
That's my first name. It means man of dawn. But Belcourt is fine.
Okay, well, whatever you prefer. On the one hand, you're very nice to say that you don't want to be divisive by using the term white. And it seems like you have an attitude of kind of cooperation, and at least in language, and not trying to offend people. And then on the other side, you'll say things like, well, we certainly want to enlist the support of our Black brothers in the athletic department. And I was just wondering, why wouldn't you enlist the support of the white brothers, or don't you consider whites your brothers?
No, I didn't mean to suggest that we are not asking for support from others, because the people that are supporting the Indian students here on campus are both Black and white.
Uh-huh.
And fact is, several people from the non-Indian community are supporting them. In terms of focusing on Black students in particular, you know, there's been a history of cooperation between Indians and Blacks down through the years. When Blacks were escaping from slavery, they many times found their asylum in a sanctuary among the different Indian nations. Similarly, when the Indian people were being rounded up by Andrew Jackson in the Trail of Tears, a death march of the Eastern tribes, many escaping from slavery, of course, found sanctuary within the black communities. In fact, as on the Trail of Tears, many blacks were also rounded up and driven to what is called Oklahoma Territory. So having had a long relationship with people like Kwame Ture, who was here on campus last week, he put out a call to the black athletes to join the Indian people in this effort. And we are in no way suggesting that we don't want the support of our non-Indian brothers and sisters from the white community. In terms of the term white man, I was only referring to the oratory or the prophecies of our great leaders of the past who at that time seen that our oppressor was for the most part 100% white.
Right.
I didn't mean to raise it in any negative or racial way.
Well, I understand that. It's just that so frequently when racial issues are brought up, there's a definite distinction between white people and then black brothers or Indian brothers, and it's as if excluding from the family of man are the white people. And I just find that to be consistent, especially among the black leaders. The second question that I have, my family came here 15 years after the Black Hawk War in 1853. Now, they were French. Now, my father-in-law, I just happened to marry a French woman, but my father-in-law came a year or so ago, and we went to see the Ile de Cache display out here near Lamont or Lockport, and they have French trappers dressed up, and then people walk around saying, "Where do you come from?" And they sound pretty stupid.
Yeah.
Now, my father-in-law thought that was funny. Now, had that been an Indian, and had you been my father-in-law, you would have come and you would have been enraged. And, you know, I mean, I agree with your rage. But I'm wondering, where does the guilt start? I mean, am I, for example, exempt from guilt for Illinois because my white family came in 1853? It seems like that one of the tactics used by both the most minorities is to assign blame and guilt to the current white population for what they say is the family of whites that caused it 150, 200, 400 years ago. I don't see, I read many books on the Trail of Tears, and I mean, it's awful, it's just terrible. But I also read some books on the Roman treatment of the Frankish tribes in what is now France and Gaul, and that is awful. But I don't blame the Romans for what they did to my ancestors. And I'm just wondering, why does that have to be part of it?
Well, your point is well taken, particularly on the first issue. On the second issue, we have never tried to motivate people or to guilt trip people. We would rather motivate people in a way that they're moved by integrity and by feelings of justice and not certainly out of guilt. You know, guilt-tripping people never accomplishes anything. The point that I wanted to, in answer to your question, is that what you have to understand today at this very time, in Guatemala, 22 Indian tribes make up more than 75% of the population of 7.3 million. In the last 8 years under Reagan and now Bush, more than 50,000 Indian people, with the support of the Zionists of Israel, who provide much of the arms and technology, 50,000 Indians have been the victims of an American-Israeli perpetrated Holocaust. 420 villages have been wiped from the face of the earth. The U.S. war against El Salvador in the last 10 years has claimed 100,000 victims. 20,000 of them are Indian people. And as an organization that represents indigenous people, it's our business to be concerned about that. I just returned 2 days ago from the 46th session of the United Nations Commission on Human Rights in Geneva, Switzerland, where I was a special representative for political prisoner Leonard Peltier, who's been languishing first in Marion Federal Prison here in Illinois and now in Leavenworth Prison. They continued, every year in the Congress of the United States, there's a whole body of legislation that further erodes our land rights, our political rights, our water rights. And I guess, brother, what I'm trying to describe is the fact that the war continues today. And if you and others are not speaking out about the injustices against Indian people today, then we are holding you responsible for what is happening today. We're certainly not holding you responsible for what happened in Illinois in the 1800s. And I in no way try to convey that particular attitude on this issue.
But just one last comment. You did say earlier that had they used Lincoln or General Custer as their mascot and knew the history of those two individuals, that they would feel ashamed.
What I was saying is that is more a reflection of America's heritage and America's value system rather than how they're trying to say now that in using Chief Alenowicz, they're actually showing pride and dignity toward Indian people. I hope you can see the real contradiction in that. And I guess I was being a little facetious in saying that maybe Abraham Lincoln and General George Armstrong Custer, or for that matter, Colonel North, who seems to be the American hero, would probably serve to be a better mascot and a reflection of America's values, America's pride.
Yes. Just a final comment. As a white man, and I will always be a white man, the thing that I guess I resent the most is the attempt to take away all my heroes, the attempt to make me feel guilty. Now, that's a perception on my part, and I understand you're not trying to do that, but I also think you have to understand that I didn't do it either to you.
Well, I think the point that I must make is that, you know, anyone is that wants to can climb under the blanket of indictment, and if they don't feel they should be under, then they shouldn't feel bad about it.
And we will go on here. I want to thank the caller very much. We have several people waiting. I want to get on to some other thoughts. Let's go to line number two for our next caller. Hello.
Hello. The university and the academic community, being intellectually oriented, might take this as a challenge to establish a course of study that it does embody the perspectives of Native Americans. It would fit certainly with the liberal arts schools in the university, and maybe even with the fine arts traditions in the university to examine a cultural perspective that isn't often presented at higher academe. And I wonder if your guest there might comment on those locations in America in higher education that do provide a fair look at the indigenous American culture.
Indian people created the first Indian Studies Department at the University in Berkeley, California, more than 20-some years ago, when at that time, of course, to my knowledge, there were no similar programs that were reaching into the Asian or the Chicano Latino or into the black community, in fact. And here we see 20-some years later, we see three students here on the campus of the University of Illinois. So your point is very well taken, and I believe that that's one of the suggestions, and that's part of the dialogue that is taking place right now, to create a more relevant Indian Studies department here on the University of Illinois, and a very good, well-organized recruitment program. I'm sure that it would certainly enhance the university if they had more and more Indian students here, and I would think that that's some of the dialogue that should go forward. But in the meantime, in order to start this period of reconciliation, that will only begin when the alumni and the faculty and the students realize that it's time to stop the use of Chief Alenowicz, who, incidentally, headdress that is being worn, you know, our chiefs, unlike what Hollywood projects, the chiefs are spiritual leaders, are counselors who had the right, the honor to wear those bonnets. They earned every one of those feathers through a lifetime of service to their people. Unlike Hollywood, these leaders had the least of the people. They suffered for the people. They served the people. The markings on the face, oftentimes this paint was used in spiritual ceremonies. And now we're seeing this being reduced to a cheap dance, a young man jumping around during the games with this headdress on, and I think that is some of the things that are really unacceptable for Indian people.
We also have the burial site over on the of the Mississippian culture that is a current conflict in Illinois. Would you care to comment on that?
Of course. I know we threatened for a long time to seek a Science Foundation grant to go out here and do a dig in Illinois on some pioneer cemetery. Who knows, we might want to go dig up Abraham Lincoln, put him on display, put wooden teeth and spectacles and remnants of different clothing on display in order to dramatize the fact of how unacceptable this is, where people can still have open graves of our ancestors on display for tourism. We are totally against what's going on at the Dixon Mines. And if your Governor Thompson here likes to put paint on his face when he goes to the Illini games, that may be reflective of what his attitude will be about keeping the Dixon Mounds open or closing them. There is a whole reawakening among our people across the country. There's legislation to create a national Indian museum so that we can, in a way, put on display those things that have an educational meaning to it, that are helpful in terms of our projecting our history. But in terms of sacred objects and, of course, skeletal remains, they all must be reinterred into the bosom of Mother Earth. Our spirit cannot make its journey to the spirit world when the physical remains of our people are still left in the museum. So I'm glad you brought that issue up.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left. Our guest this morning is American Indian activist Vernon Belcourt. We're talking about some issues in Native American rights. And if you have questions, we'd be happy to get on as many people as we can. We do have a couple of callers we'll get right to. A local number here, 333-WILL. A toll-free 800-222-WILL. On the issue of protecting sacred sites and display of remains, are you pleased that that is at least now those issues are being raised and there's some public discussion about whether or not that is appropriate?
Oh yes, we've obviously made considerable headway in this area. There's a new consciousness among our people, and of course there's still resistance from those people who operate different tourist attractions alongside the highway that feel it's okay to keep the physical remains of our people on display. But there has been generally a whole new consciousness. We're getting some support in Congress, in spite of the fact that 90% of the legislation that's introduced every year further erodes our land base, our political rights, our water rights. We are making some headway in that area to be able to stop this kind of display of our sacred remains of our people.
Mm-hmm. On to our next caller. We'll go to line number 3. Hello?
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for having the guest on this morning. I agree with everything you said, what I fail to understand is why the university administration puts its stamp of approval on institutional racism. It boggles the mind that people with PhDs, people with law degrees, say, yes, as a white man, I am best able to judge the racial sensitivities of an important culture group. And I guess it's just pure disbelief that Mr. Belcourt's arguments have failed to persuade our university.
Mm. You have any
reminder?
Well, other than that, I certainly appreciate your views. And I thought that there would be a lot of negative phone calls. That usually hasn't been the case, because I try to explain things in its historical context and bring it up to the current contemporary times, and I think for that reason people have a better understanding. However, the saying familiarity breeds contempt. I see that reign supreme here on campus when these young people, particularly Charlene and the other young people in the community here on campus who have tried to raise this issue, they're the targets of the most hateful racist bigotry that we've seen anywhere in the country. And I guess that is upheld here when we say that familiarity breeds contempt. I'm not saying anything different than what they've been saying. Maybe I'm saying it a little different in the fact that I come from the outside and I'm called a nationally and internationally known Indian activist, quote, gives more credibility. But I'm only here to support these young people, and whatever good comes out of it, the credit has to go to these three students on this campus who have raised this issue. And I think they're performing a tremendous service to this community to point out this racial intolerance that is being projected through the use of this mascot.
I have a question, though. Is the thrust of the concern with Chief Illini Wick and his interesting merging of two rather different Indian cultures, the Sioux and the Illini, or is it to the term Illini at all? I mean, if we were the Illini and, based on the Indians who are here in the state, without Chief Illini Wick, would that be offensive? As a white woman, I don't know the sensitivities, and I just would like to know what your reaction would be to that.
Well, first of all, I know one of the arguments is that the dance that they're portraying here comes from the Sioux Nation. I can tell you that among the Sioux Nation, the Dakota, Lakota people, that the American Indian movement is very strong, and I have attended powwows and dances throughout that part of the country for 20-some years. And what I seen last night being portrayed here has absolutely nothing to do with the Dakota or Sioux culture. It certainly has nothing to do with any kind of dance that I've seen performed by tribes nationwide. And when I say nationwide, I'm talking about Canada, Central and South America as well. So it's not even an accurate portrayal of our dance and our culture. So I think under those circumstances, any use of an Indian mascot, particularly when we know the history of Illinois and what has been called collectively the Illini. There are many nations here that have been destroyed by America's settlers, and we see their great-grandchildren still perpetuating that war against us in a much different way. So I don't think that any kind of use of the mascot is acceptable.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. On to another caller here. We'll go to line number one. Hello.
Hello. Do you have any opinion of another American Indian activist named Russell Means?
Well, Russell Means, of course, is a very long-time organizer and leader of the American Indian Movement, except several years ago he resigned from the movement. Fact is, he resigned at least four or five times, and each time he does so, the media runs and covers his press conferences. But as far as I know, he's going on to other things, other interests, and we in the American Indian Movement continue on.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Another caller here. Back to the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, you've answered most of my questions while I was waiting, but I was just wondering, you know, I agree very much with the burial grounds. I think that's really a disgrace to show something like that. And but I was just wondering, is there any way that you could have, like, an expert or something teach these people what the traditions are? I guess you've covered this a little bit where you said that there's no way that you'd let them use the Indian. But, you know, isn't there any way that they could help educate people?
Well, I think that the best way that can be done is not through the use of the mascot of Indian people. I think what the faculty and the people that run this university and the community have to start supporting is a very good Indian recruitment program to get other Indian students on this campus. And I think they're present alone and putting on their dances and their yearly events, like we have Black African Month. We have, I imagine, the Latinos on campus have something, the Asians have something. I think through that means the Indian students could organize a festival yearly where we could put on display our beautiful art, our culture, our music, and our authentic dance. I think that's the way we can best educate the area and the community.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
On to another caller. Go to line number two. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Thank you especially for not sweeping this issue under the rug like everybody else seems to be. I appreciate you keeping it, or at least giving people airtime. And I want to go back and emphasize what your second caller had to say, that people who are keep saying they don't know why this is such a big issue and they don't understand why people are so upset about this. And I think that those are the key words, they don't know. Like you said, they haven't done the research. They don't understand the whole history of the thing, and that's why they don't know, and that's what they have to acknowledge, that they don't know, and so they should find out, instead of going around saying, well, we don't know why people are so upset about this. They should find out why people are so upset about this. And they say they want to honor the Indian people, but if they really want to honor the Indian people, why don't they go to the Indian people and say, how do you want to be honored? What can we do for you? I don't think it's honoring Indian people to pick out some part of their civilization to make a cartoon out of it. I think that they should go to the Indian people and ask them. And I think, too, that just like the Berlin Wall had to come down, and just like apartheid has to end in South Africa, that our attitude towards the Indian culture has to change. And I would like to appeal to the people of this university who are in charge of it to recognize that we have to evolve into humane people and to do that graciously instead of having to be dragged kicking and screaming into this, into change, humanitarian change, which just makes them look like idiots, just like our ancestors were idiots for perpetrating this horror on the people. And I'd like to thank your guest very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you much for your kind thoughts. If I might, David, I want to share a thought and follow up on what she is saying. You know, there are so many more important issues that we should be dealing with, that we should be talking. We should be talking about Mother Earth, the environment, the water, the continued degradation of our environment, acid rain. There are so many more issues that would bring us together and unify us rather than being divided on this issue, the mascot. So we're willing to get this issue behind us. All they have to say is the mascot's gone. Now let's get on negotiation about whether we're going to continue calling the team, the athletic program, the Illini. I believe that's up to the Indian community, not only here but nationwide, to have some input. But, you know, I'm from Minneapolis at the present time. I have a home in Minneapolis and an office, and I live up in the White Earth Reservation, northern Minnesota, the Chippewa Nation. In Minneapolis, they opened up a garbage burner, and they're hauling the ash from that, the toxic ash. They're hauling it, and they're dumping it someplace here in Illinois. I don't know where, but they're dumping it here somewhere. And I'm reminded of some words of a great leader by the name of Seattle. His name is really Chief Sealth of the Duwamish Confederacy and the Suquamish tribe in what is now called Washington State. And in 1855, after he had seen the expansion of the 13 colonies to the Pacific coast, and he and his people were being forced to submit to the United States government military forces, here is a prophecy that he had to share. And I want your listeners to think about acid rain, the degradation of our environment, nuclear explosions under the desert, the madness of Star Wars, wars raging all over the world, the terrible conditions, health conditions in this country, the AIDS virus that is decimating large sectors of the society. Seattle prophesies this time, and here is what he said. Whatever befalls the earth, befalls the people of the earth. We humans did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. What we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Tribe follows tribe, nation follows nation, like the waves of the sea. It is the order of nature, and regret is useless. Your time of decay may be distant, but it will surely come. For even the white man, whose God walked and talked among them as friend to friend, could not be exempt from the common destiny. We may be family, after all. We will see. End quote. So I guess in that I would like to repeat the words of Seattle by saying, we may be family, after all. We will see. And so I'm urging your listeners and those that now can see better through this issue to join forces with the Indian students here on campus and their supporters, which come from the black community, from the white community. And fact is, to bring about a family in order to deal with this issue, get it behind us, and get on with building a very relevant Indian studies program here on campus, a department, and start the recruitment, and get on with healing the wounds that this issue has caused. At least that's our hope, and that's our prayer.
Well, we will have to leave it at that. I want to make sure people know that our guest this morning, Vernon Belcourt, will be speaking on some of these issues today at noon in the Illini Union, in Illini Room C, off the South Lounge. That starts at noon, and anybody who was interested in attending is welcome to do that. There are many things we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I understand that you'll be back to speak at the Friday Forum in a few weeks, and I hope perhaps we'll get the chance to talk again.
Yeah, I'll be at the Y Series on April 6th, and I'm looking forward to seeing many of my friends here again, and maybe we can continue this discussion.
All right.